This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Happily Ever After, the evolution of the Disney princess.
So we all love Disney.
We do.
All of us. Even the people who say they don't love Disney, love Disney. This is a fact. I know some people genuinely are not big fans of Disney. But I think we can agree that everyone has at least one that they'll tolerate.
I agree with that. And I was looking through all the films, and obviously Disney's done not just animated feature films, not just films about fairy tales and princesses, but something like 400, 450 films which were aimed at the same sort of group and genre, etc. Everything from nature to you've got kidnapped Swiss Family Robinson, one of our dinosaurs is missing. Terrifying number of films, more films than I realised they'd done. We're mostly looking at the animated feature films which feature princesses, and that's actually a very small segment of the films that Disney actually created.
So what are some of the lesser known films that Disney have created then?
There's one that I really like. It's The Three Lives of Thomasina Tabby Cat. And I cannot get it on DVD anywhere. It's just so cool. Anyway, no, it's probably a really... I'd probably watch it now and think, oh God, that's a really awful film. It's like, I loved for years One of Our Dinosaurs is Missing. And it came on every Christmas, and I used to love watching it as a child. And I finally got my hands on a DVD for the princely sum of £3. And I watched it, and I thought, this is dreadful. This is so terribly racist. I'm embarrassed to be watching it.
Yikes.
And it's not that the plot's bad or anything. It's still funny. It's still got this quirky charm. It's just I couldn't get past the whole, instead of employing Asian people to represent Asian people, we've taken white people and given them bad makeup and... told them to enact a stereotype. I just can't get over it. So I'm not sure I can ever watch that again now.
Yeah, the problem with growing up, become conscious of actually how awfully racist some things really are.
That's the thing with fairy tales and with, particularly fairy tales where you have a princess type heroine and the Disney films, the 24 of the 56 animated films they've done, which have featured some sort of princess.
Yeah.
So it's a really small segment of the films they've produced, but those are the ones that really stick in people's minds, and inquiring minds want to know why.
I think it's definitely, they kind of hit a jackpot with the princesses, didn't they?
They did, but I mean, that's the thing. If you look at how far apart the first three are, and they're probably the three most well-known ones in some ways, you've got Snow White, which came out in 1937, Cinderella, which came out in 1950, that's a big leap. And then Sleeping Beauty, which came out in 1959, that's 9 years later. That's still quite a large leap. And yeah. I know obviously they refined their process in creating animated feature films. But it wasn't like they didn't make animated feature films between 1937 and 1950. They did. So it's funny that the ones that have stayed, the ones that have stuck, tend to be the ones featuring a princess.
Well, I wondered if it wasn't because it was the first, and I may be wrong in this, but it was the first time where we kind of had gendered TV, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So films that were directed for little girls.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I don't think that was necessarily what they aimed at with Snow White, because it was more of an experiment. It was a case of, no, we can make, instead of the short cartoons that were so common at the time, we can make a film that lasts for over an hour.
Yeah.
And it will stand up against other films.
Yeah, but I wonder whether its success isn't largely down to its popularity with young girls.
Quite possibly. It's one of those things where you send something out and you think it's being targeted to one group of people, and actually it really makes a splash with a completely unknown group, or
yeah,
one that you wouldn't expect it to.
Which is kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
So, all right, Disney princesses. Who's your favourite?
My favourite, it would have to be Belle, because I just love Beauty and the Beast, and also I really over-relate to the whole sort of walking around with your nose stuck in a book thing.
Yeah, I actually think I'm probably with you on this. I think Belle is one of my favourite princesses. And I like her story because she's the saviour in the story, in every sense of the word. She is the saviour. She saves her father, she saves the Beast, and she gets what she wants at the end, you know, at the end of it all. She gets what she wants. She gets rewarded for being kind, but also for being very brave.
And intelligent. And the thing is, she also saves herself, which is perhaps the most important part that we always forget with Beauty and the Beast, is she saves herself. She's self-rescuing. You don't, I mean, we have more princesses like that now, but it certainly was unusual in 1991, which was when that film came out.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't settle for, well, I guess I should just marry him. Just I should just marry Gaston,
No.
and just be what society expects me to be. She went no, and in the end she got actually what she deserved, which was
Yeah. I mean, she wasn't looking for necessarily true love and marriage either. It was a case of, no, I want adventure. I want more than this. I
but
know I'm not
she
stupid.
yeah, she wanted to be recognized, she for what she was, and that was clever, and bright. She wanted to be mentally stimulated, and in the end she was mentally stimulated.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely one of my favorite, all-time favorite fairy tales, because she really does have agency, and she's an incredibly popular princess, and it's an incredibly popular fairy tale actually.
And obviously, there's the new live action version, which is being released in March.
Which I have mixed feelings about.
I'm sort of all in, and I'll probably get my heart completely crushed because it will be wrong, but I'm going in anyway.
Well, no, I like the reason, I guess I like Emma Watson very much. I think she as a person is very good, and I liked her in Harry Potter, but I just don't feel like she suits Belle at all. Her voice just doesn't work for me as Belle.
I was a bit more reserved when I thought about, that they were actually keeping a lot of the singing, because I don't think they need to do that with the live action ones as much. But
I'm not sure there will be actually as much singing as we think. I think, but I think they want to sort of keep a certain extent because they want to get our memory glands going, if you know what I mean. The, oh, yeah, I remember this song.
yeah, there's a big when you consider there's. If I'm being brutally strict, there's only four real princess films between Beauty and the Beast and Snow White, including Snow White. That's a really big leap in terms of character development, because Snow White wasn't a very rounded character. I was going to say, obviously she was representing a 13, 14-year-old girl at the time. Obviously Snow White was a bit more of an experiment, but she literally starts off with "One day my prince will come," and you've got Belle, who's very much a case of, I'm restless. This is not doing enough for me living here like this. I want more out of life. I'm not just going to settle for the handsome bloke who lives down the road.
He's a git.
Because we don't actually know what the prince is like in Snow White. He never really says anything.
Yeah, he doesn't really speak,
We just
but
know that he's quite happy to kiss a girl who's supposedly dead in a coffin, and that's not a great recommendation to me.
oh well. Take what you can get, Jules.
I'm not going to lie around in a glass coffin. Well, any sort of coffin, in fact,
Now you're just being coffinist. I don't know what that means. I think we ought to be careful because for some people Snow White is their favorite, and she's certainly the classic one. She because she was the first.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the film. I just think it's a really I interesting. I mean, obviously, a lot of time passed, but it's interesting the development in what people started wanting from a character, because they wouldn't have started producing characters who are more dynamic unless people wanted them.
Well, again, I think that the development of the Disney princess and the character is again down to Disney realizing who their audience were.
Yeah.
Because I think up until that point, Snow White wasn't created for little girls, but it was such a hit with little girls that they suddenly went, hang on, this is where our audience is. Little girls want to see stories about princesses, but they don't want to just see stories about princesses who are unconscious for half of the film and who are just good and nice and do all the cleaning and stuff like that. They want to see stories about little girls with agency and who have control and power, and more often than not, the message of Disney is kindness and patience. But in some of the later ones, it was kindness and patience, but also not taking any crap from people.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if we go back and look at the second princess film after Snow White, which is Cinderella, you've got a more dynamic, more developed character, but once again, it's very much she doesn't really rise up against her stepmother and stepsisters. A lot of it is about patience and you will get your reward. And again, you don't have a very developed hero There's no developed prince in that, really.
Though, I mean, one thing I like, and people just, you know, people get angry about Cinderella, because they're like, you know, she needed someone to come and save her. And I think it's to the contrary. She didn't go to the ball so that the prince would fall in love with her. She went to the ball because she wanted to go to the ball. She wanted to have a night off, basically.
Yeah, one night where she got to be how the other half live, as it were.
Basically, yeah, where she got to be how she was actually raised to be. She got to wear a nice dress and yeah, just go and have fun. And she didn't fall in love with the prince knowing that he was the prince.
No, absolutely. And obviously you've got her at the beginning of the film looking towards the palace, and it's a case of, well, she's not scheming on how to get the prince to marry her. It's a case of, I'd really, really like to live like that kind of thing. I'd really, you know, that's a fairy tale place for me. I'd like to move towards something that's brighter and isn't, every, you know, day-to-day drudgery and cruelty from my supposed family.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think there's a blog I'm following, and she sort of watches these Disney films and then gives them a rating in terms of feminism. And I think while it's an interesting exercise, it sort of misses the point, because you have to take them, firstly, within their era. Secondly, that they were being quite faithful to the source material, mm-hmm. you know, as much as possible without it being gross. Thirdly, it's a case of, you know, what made a dynamic heroine, well, not dynamic, what made a heroine, what were aspirational traits at the time were completely different to what we might think is aspirational now.
Yeah. Because, no, I agree.
And there is a definite line of progression, because if you go to Sleeping Beauty again, you've got her doing more things, and, you know, she actually gets upset and storms off at one point.
Yeah, she does.
Which is quite unusual. She meets the prince, and again, not knowing he's the prince, but falls in love with him when she's not supposed to, when she's basically been promised in marriage to someone else who turns out to be the prince. But, you know, they're going to disobey their parents.
Yeah. And Sleeping Beauty was... I'm not sure whether I'm correct in saying Sleeping Beauty was a little bit of a flop. Sleeping Beauty is a hard one, because she is unconscious for half of the film.
Well, I mean, what I like that they did with Sleeping Beauty, and I think it wasn't as successful as some of the previous ones, but what I liked about it was they focused on her relationship with the three fairies.
Yeah.
So you got more interpersonal relationships. The weird thing with Disney is that the villains are nearly always really well developed. More so than the heroines in a lot of cases. Yeah. So it was good to see her with these three quite flawed but good characters, having as family, as it were. The fairy tale that Sleeping Beauty is based on is utterly horrific. I don't recommend it to anybody. But I always found that in the Disney film, the sort of, oh, well, she's going to prick her finger on a spinning wheel. And then it's like, well, instead of telling her about the problem, let's tell her that she doesn't have any parents, she's an orphan, and hide her away in the country and burn all the spinning wheels, and not tell her not to touch the spinning wheel.
Yeah, because that'll absolutely definitely work. There's no way that could go wrong. Also, it was the fact that, like, she'll be safe after her, like, her, I can't remember which birthday 16th. It is. Yeah, after her 16th birthday. And they decide, I know, let's take her to the castle on her 16th birthday instead of keeping her in hiding until the day after.
Yeah, you'd think, wouldn't you? Really? Yeah.
Hold on a second.
Or even better, let's have a fake birthday.
Exactly.
Anyway, yeah, I quite like it, like the film as it is. The closest thing we've got to a princess after that, until we get to The Little Mermaid in 1989, is Maid Marian in Robin Hood, which I've included just because I really like the film.
Oh gosh, Robin Hood is excellent.
It's the fox, isn't it?
It's the fox. Like, I don't know what it is about Disney trying to make me fall in love with animated foxes, because I'm thinking of Zootopia recently as well. It's real issue.
I was the same. I was just like, I should not be finding that fox hot, you know?
Real issue.
And I also really like Bianca in The Rescuers, which is 1977. So again, you've got a bit more progression. But you would say she's still traditionally feminine for the time, even though she's a mouse. Getting that little bit aside, but at the same time, she's quite dynamic. She's the one who's brave, she's the one who's adventurous, she's the one who talks Bernard into going, and I like that. That's pretty cool,
because he doesn't want to go.
He's really doing it
to impress her.
He's very, very superstitious, and I love it in The Rescuers down under. It's like, you know, people have that sort of good, the two characters have got together, this is my one true ship thing. My one true ship is probably Bernard and Bianca.
Aww.
It's just like, oh, that makes me feel all kind of squishy, but perhaps I'll cut this bit out, because I don't want these to know this.
No, we're keeping it. Let the world know you have a soft side.
If we don't want to include the animal characters, then there's
No,
30.
we're definitely. I think we'll include the animal character. I
Okay.
think Maid Marian definitely counts.
I think so too. And I know some people think that version of Robin Hood's really cheesy, but it's probably one of my preferred versions of Robin Hood.
I tend to agree with you. For one, Robin is actually English in that one, which helps.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it was nice because it captured something very pure but true to the original tale, or true to the original ideal of the tale, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and a lot of it is bits of folk tale mashed together with, a possible thread of historical character.
Yeah. I like Robin Hood. And Maid Marian in that was interesting because, again, she was a very soft character in some senses.
Yeah, she was quite gentle and pliant, but at the same time she very much knew her own mind as well.
Yeah, she did.
And she was again, kind. I liked Dame Cluck as well.
Yeah, she was excellent. Clucky.
But it was nice to see, again, something like a female friendship and dynamic female characters again.
Yeah, and female friendship, I think that's something we should actually look into a little bit more, is that we've actually, especially in a lot more of the recent ones, we get these female friendships, which is actually really nice. Because very often, actually, now in a lot of material that it's focused toward girls, until fairly recently, there was this weird thing, which is that it's girls versus other girls. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we must be in competition for each other, and quite often we must be in competition for a male or male attention.
Yeah. And so it was actually kind of nice to not have that.
Yeah. I mean, if you, however much you like Cinderella, the whole thing's one big competition to get the prince.
Tis, yeah. And that actually, I know we're skipping a little bit, but I really want to talk about the Frog Princess. So we're definitely skipping here.
We are. Frog Princess, much later, 2009. You can tell I looked the dates up because I'm normally really bad with dates.
I really liked that film, and I liked Lottie, I think her name is. I mean, I liked the film for a number of reasons. I felt Tiana was a fantastic character. I felt the whole thing was really nicely put together. The animation was beautiful. And Tiana's focus was on fulfilling her dream,
Yeah.
and that was really nice. But the other reason I really liked that film was because you had Lottie, and Lottie was the rich princess girl, basically. Who up until this point, when I started watching it, you saw that they were friends when they were kids, and I felt certain that this was a character who was gearing up to be nasty, because that is what sort of we kind of expect from that archetype.
Yeah, it does lead you to think that it's going in that direction, doesn't it?
Yeah, that they're going to be friends, but actually Lottie's really going to resent that Tiana gets the prince instead, or stuff like that. And it wasn't like that at all. And it wasn't like that I expected to see that they were friends when they were kids, and then when they grew up, Lottie became distant and prissy and stuff like that. And it was so nice because actually it was this example of two very, very different people from very, very different backgrounds who were friends, and they were just friends.
Yeah. I mean, and Lottie, neither of the character is flawless, which is
Yeah.
good. And Lottie's just a bit thoughtless, which you'd kind of expect from someone who'd been brought up with her advantages, probably.
Yeah, she is a bit thoughtless, but then I like that at the end, she's willing to kiss Naveen to try and break the curse because all she ever wanted from her life was the prince. That was her wish. Tiana wanted her restaurant, but Lochte's wish was to get the prince. And in the end, she's willing to do that for Lottie, for Tiana. She loves Tiana.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so nice. It's so nice to have those kinds of friendships where it's not competition, it's actually, this is what I wanted, but I'm going to do this for you because I love you too and you're my friend. And that was just so heartwarming. It was so wonderful. The
Yeah.
film was progressive in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it was. And it is something actually that Disney has been doing more of. Obviously, they've been including a lot more diversity, but also looking at different types of love, not just sort of the romantic fairy tale idealized form of love, but you've got Brave, where it's love between a mother and a daughter, and how complicated that can get sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
And Frozen, obviously, which is one of the most recent ones, whereby it's a love between sisters. And it's a case of, well, you know, it's no less true than the archetypal true love type thing. And I really liked what they did in Frozen. Again, I'm jumping around a bit. We will get to Frozen properly in a minute.
Okay, let's go back. Let's go back in
Let's
time.
go back
We're
to
trying
the
to
li
do this in
back
order.
to the Little Mermaid.
Little Mermaid. Now, we mentioned the Little Mermaid before. I know you have a few problems with the original fairy tale.
Yeah, I do like the Disney film though. Although I also feel I'm sort of cheating by liking the Disney film and not really enjoying the original fairy tale.
I mean, the original fairy tale is fairly, you know, pressing for numerous reasons, and you're not a big fan of Hans Christian Andersen either, so
No, I do like
that
Hans
doesn't
Christian
help.
Andersen.
I thought you didn't.
No, I just don't like The Little Mermaid.
Oh, I thought you found him preachy.
I do, but it doesn't mean I don't like him.
Oh, fair enough.
I can see someone's flaws and still like them.
Why you stick around with me?
Not at all. You're not flawed. What are you talking about?
No, go on.
I was going to say, I really like the character of Ariel in The Little Mermaid. I think that's, again, building on the previous films, you've got a female character there who, again, is a princess, but is so much more than that and is so fully developed. And she's, you know, a bit naive and a bit innocent, but she's adventurous and she's curious about everything. And I love that as a motive, not just sort of, it's not just the fact that she quite fancies Eric that makes her change her species.
Yeah, because the thing is that she finds Eric because she's curious about the human world, and she's been collecting all these amazing things from wrecks and stuff like that. So it isn't just about Eric, actually.
No.
And she's also another thing I think is quite important was that she's clumsy.
Yeah, which you kind of expect. I know in the original fairy tale it says you'll have grace unknown by any other man kind of thing, but it'll always hurt you to walk because you're not really supposed to be on legs or feet or whatever. But she's has real difficulty getting used to having legs instead of a tail.
Yeah, she does. You know, she has difficulty walking at first. And she's a little graceless in some ways, you know, in that she doesn't understand social graces.
No.
She's there using the fork to comb her hair and stuff like that. And she's there kind of doing stuff which is unladylike. Which Eric, in the end, sort of falls in love with her for, you know, like taking control of the horses at one point and stuff like that. She's doing things which are not typical ladylike behavior. She's quite a boisterous character.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Because she's always 100% genuine, even when she's wrong. And I think that's another aspect that it's good that has been brought in. It's not somebody who's got up, dressed up in a ball gown and is putting forward their best front or their best version of themselves. This is someone just being themselves fully.
And I think it was actually very important because it was the first time we really had a character who was like that. And she's an excellent role model for girls in this sense because, you know, people complain and say, oh yeah, she just changed herself for a man. But actually, she didn't change herself for a man. She made a sacrifice for a life that she wanted to lead because she felt suffocated where she was. But she didn't change her character. She didn't change her character at all. She
No.
lost her voice, but she was still absolutely Ariel from start to finish.
Yeah. So yeah, it would be very, very hard not to like the Little Mermaid as done by Disney because it is such an engaging character. And again, you've got a very likable hero there as well.
He is, and again, he's it's not only that he's likable, he is actually quite developed. He's a developed character. He has several lines. We see him interacting with other people. We see him interacting with his men and stuff like that, and how he treats them. So yeah, he's an interesting character. And yeah, I liked The Little Mermaid. I like mermaids though, as you know. Whereas you find them cold and fishy.
Well, I like the Little Mermaid, the Disney version. So there you go. I mean, obviously Sebastian the Crab is awesome.
Of course. Goes without saying.
Yeah. To be honest, one thing that Disney does is it fills its films with really, really good, catchy songs. And you know, the Little Mermaid was a height hitherto unknown at that point. So yeah. That was great.
The thing is, it's as I always I see a lot of people say, it's just like when you're the Little Mermaid, or when you're young and you watch Little Mermaid, you're just there like, yeah, I forgot what the dad is called. It's like, yeah, she's like, I'm 14 years old, I'm almost an adult. And when you're a child, you're like, yeah, she's almost an adult, let her do what she wants. And now we watch and you're like, no, Ariel, go to bed. You're a child, stop it. You don't know what love is yet. It's the moment you realize you're now, we've become Sebastian the crab. As you get older and you're like, yeah, the human world is terrible. Let's just stay here. It's much nicer.
Anyway, after The Little Mermaid, we obviously had Beauty and the Beast, which we've mentioned,
Yep.
and then came Aladdin, which an even more dynamic princess in
Yeah.
Jasmine.
Now, I know Aladdin is obviously based off one of the Arabian Nights tales. She was not going to be called Jasmine. She was going to be called the original princess's name from the tale itself, but it was very, very difficult to at least read from a Western perspective. So the marketing team probably put their foot down a little bit. So she was called Jasmine. And Jasmine is a fantastic character, actually.
Yeah, obviously she's in the position where she's being pushed into getting married because that's what you do, and that seems to be a very arbitrary reason behind it. It's a case of, well, you've reached your 16th birthday, you should be getting married, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which, considering the source material and the time, probably wasn't out of the realms of possibility.
And the thing is, she's not necessarily against getting married, but she wants to have choice in that.
Yeah.
She doesn't like any of the suitors that her father is sending at her, and it probably doesn't help that she's clearly more intelligent than her father is.
And all the suitors that have come along so far. I think she's fed up with the fact that they're rich, they're spoilt, they don't have an original thought, they're not very clever, they're very self-involved and narcissistic.
Yeah, and she wants to see the world. She wants adventure, she wants life, and she's trapped by her circumstance.
Yeah.
And yeah, in the end, and how she and Aladdin originally meet, is because she sneaks out of the castle.
And I think that's the first time we actually see a Disney princess really asserting herself as an authority in public, isn't it?
Yeah, she absolutely does, and she demands respect. She's a very powerful character. And you know she's powerful because she even has command over her father. Her father can't make her do anything.
No.
Even though, again, we have the ear that it's written in, the ear that it's meant to be, and the fact that he is supposed to be the one in charge, and she's very clearly actually the one in charge. She's a lot smarter than him. And we can see this. There's evidence of this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in Aladdin, the main character is supposed to be Aladdin, and he's very, very likable and very well developed. But Jasmine is just as developed and is a really good sort of foil, a good match for him.
Yeah.
You can actually see them, you can see them being together, not just because they happen to be the two most attractive people at the time.
Yeah. And it's also the fact she doesn't fall in love with him actually until she realizes who he is.
No.
In the film, she actually says, she asks him where the monkey is, and she realizes, no, you're the guy I met before. And that's when they actually really fall in love, after he takes her flying.
Yeah, it's a case of somebody recognizing the fact that she wants to be recognized as a person,
Yeah.
not have the same lines sort of trotted out that everyone else has said before in an attempt to appease her father, which, to be honest, isn't that difficult.
Yeah.
And of course, the other thing with Aladdin is it teaches you never trust the Grand Vizier.
Yeah, never trust
Ever.
that
He's that close to the throne, he is not trustworthy. But she
Oh.
also does something which, again, I don't think we've seen in Disney characters before, Disney princesses certainly before, and that's at the end where Jafar is saying, I want you to make Jasmine fall in love with me, to the genie, and the genie's like, oh, I can't do
Yeah,
that.
she plays along with it
That's like
to
Rehypno territory, you know?
Yeah, like that's not something that I can do. But yeah, she then distracts him using her own body and stuff like
Yeah, she
that.
acts in a seductive manner, which is not something you really see in a Disney princess before that point.
No, you don't see it in Disney princesses. You see it in other characters sometimes, but
Yeah.
they are not the princesses because the princesses are supposed to be pure. And the thing is, she's not put down for that. It's not like at the end of it, Aladdin goes, but by the way, that was gross or anything like that. You know, she does that and she pretty much saves him because
Yeah.
of it.
Distracts Jafar just long enough, and it's interesting. I mean, it seems like such a tiny thing, but actually adding that in is quite important. I mean, there is the film that comes after Aladdin is The Lion King, which isn't really a princess film at all. But it's interesting that one of the things that was cut out of The Lion King was a scene where Scar tries to get it on with Simba's mother. I think it's his mother and not his and not Nyala.
Yeesh.
Yeah, they decided it was too adult, and but to me that would have made sense in a way because he wanted to take everything his brother had.
Oh, yeah, but
Whereas in the musical, the stage show, which I've never seen, admittedly, but my sister's been 3 times, so I've been reliably informed about it. He actually does try it on with Nyala instead. So yeah, I think the argument was Disney said it was too adult content, which is interesting when you consider a bit later on The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which we'll get to in due course.
yes.
So yeah, after Aladdin, you had Pocahontas in 1995.
Now, ignoring the negative way that Pocahontas was treated in some respects.
Yeah, it is in no way accurate historically or culturally.
And Disney pretty much did ignore everything that when they were asking the indigenous people, the Native Americans, about stuff, they pretty much ignored everything they said, so well done, Disney. But I mean, that aside, Pocahontas was not a bad film.
No, and in terms of things like being recognizing that you're part of everything else and having a sort of environmental awareness and compassion and interconnectedness and being strong-minded enough to stand against other people when they said the opposite, I think there was some good stuff in there. It is a bit, it's one of those ones that you look at now and think, oh, that's a bit that's a bit painful, but there was some good stuff in there.
Yes,
It
there
was
was.
unfortunate about the delivery method, I think, is what it comes down to. The character herself, as they've betrayed her, if you just take her as a fictional character, is pretty good. It's just unfortunately the as I said, the delivery method.
Yeah, but she, again, she is a character who again chooses who she loves, even though he's not who she's supposed to love. And the other interesting thing is that she falls in love with him, but they don't actually get to be together in the end.
No, they don't. I mean, in that respect, it stuck with historical accuracy. And I don't know if you've ever seen the second film, Journey to a New World. She doesn't actually ever end up with him. She falls in love with somebody else. They realise they've grown apart. They probably played that a little bit more nicely than it happened in real life. But...
Yeah, well, in real life, she was just a little girl, so.
Well, yeah, she was 12, wasn't she? Although that would have been considered old enough to be married.
Yeesh.
Which we find really gross now, but we have to remember that there were different rules at different times. So, and
Doesn't
if
mean
you've
they
been
were
brought up
right.
to think you'd be married at 12, then you might look at things a bit differently. Anyway, moving on from Pocahontas
It's
to The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Not a fairy tale,
Not a
not
fairy
technically a
tale.
princess, but still an interesting character.
Yeah, and interesting enough to warrant us talking about her. Esmeralda.
Very, very dynamic. As in physically dynamic and athletic, as well as intelligent and kind.
And representing a people who are not often represented positively in the media, which is
No.
the Mani, during a very interesting, I mean, obviously it's based on the book, and I feel it really captured actually the essence of the book very well.
It did capture the spirit of the book. It's been a bit too kind to some characters, like Phoebus, for example.
Yeah, but then I guess they did also have to make it approachable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because
We
the
needed to have the prince character.
yeah, I mean the book, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, is in some ways I found it quite upsetting, because nobody really wins, do they?
No, but I mean, it is quite a historical tale in some senses.
Yeah,
And
very
nobody
much so.
really was winning at that time.
No, and they've downplayed the Disney haven't downplayed it, but they've made it more subtext how the Romani were treated. But also, they haven't the thing with the Court of Miracles and the fact that that there were tricksters and shysters amongst them as well. They haven't like completely thrown it all off. Romani did play into that.
No, it was a very interesting film, and it was also, I mean, it is a very sad film, but it was interesting again because the main character is not actually the prince in the end.
No.
And I've just forgotten his name.
Quasimodo.
Quasimodo. Yeah. Thank you. Quasimodo falls in love with Esmeralda, but he doesn't get to be with her because she falls in love with someone else. And again, interesting, we have this story about, and you can tell it's centered towards female because he's upset, but he doesn't get wildly jealous. At the end of the day, he's actually very happy for them.
Yeah, he has that one horrible moment where he realises that he was wrong and she doesn't love him like that at all.
Yeah.
But again, it's a different depiction of true love where you actually care about the person being happy more than you care about having what you want.
Yeah. And you can understand why he reacts how he does, because this is a man who's been abused his entire life.
Yeah, I mean, Frollo took him in, but he almost took him in like you'd... The relation... He kept him almost as a grudge.
Yeah.
I think is the best way of saying it.
I think Frollo took him in very much to sort of appease his own sort of, aren't I good and saintly, look what I've done, look what I've sacrificed.
And it's like, I can't actually stand him. I can't stand the sight of him. But perhaps I can turn him to some good kind of thing.
Yeah,
it was
all about Frollo. It was all about Frollo sort of...
Really depicts how awful extreme goodness is.
Yeah.
So we've seen villainous characters who are just evil, and yes, we've joined the dark side kind of thing, but this is a case of, you know, you have a character who really genuinely believes they are good and they are righteous, and that's something that's very difficult to argue with because they genuinely believe it.
Yeah.
And again, the sexual subtext there. That whole scene with the fireplace and the fact that he's got this real desire for Esmeralda.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think we really see much of that in any previous type films, do we?
No, it was an incredibly brave thing to address.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether it wasn't also about recognising some of the things that were happening during the time. I mean, when did the movie come out?
1996.
Yeah, and I wonder whether it wasn't also addressing the conscious that there was suddenly, maybe I'm wrong here, you know, there was suddenly a lot of things coming out about certain churches and behaviours.
Yes, and I agree. 1996 would have been my first year at college, and I do remember at the time there was a real shift in attitude, and it was very noticeable over the sort of 2-3 years at that time, certainly down in Weymouth, which is where I was.
Yeah.
And not only a shift in attitude to sort of the churches and things, where people were questioning more and there was more of a, if you like, an atheist type movement, they were being more strident about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, things about abuse allegations were coming out.
Yeah.
But there was also a case of people were being more open to the idea of different types of sexuality.
Yeah.
And different, you know, it wasn't perfect and it was still very difficult, but I remember it all happening, and it was happening around the same time. So it's very interesting that they included something that was so overtly sexual and sexual in a twisted and quite deviant, horrible way in a film that was predominantly for children.
Yeah. But I think the other thing was that it was sexual. It addressed something, which was the fact that he had, we can say, quite natural attraction to this woman. She was a beautiful woman. He was attracted to her. But because of who he was and the way he held himself, you know, I am good, I am pure, I am the voice of God kind of thing. And this militant repression of natural sexuality and stuff like that, the feelings came out in this very twisted way.
Yeah, it became her fault. She became a witch, so she either had to marry him or die.
Yeah, she basically either had to return his affections, which he felt were dirty, and the only way he could make them unpure would be to marry her and to purify her in that way and to appease himself. But he was very ashamed of that, and so it was decided that it was her fault. It was her fault he felt this way, and she was the one who was causing it.
Yeah, again, very in line with the book and with the old tradition of you can marry a witch or, you know, and another criminal or deviant off the gallows and make them an honest person.
Yeah.
After that, Hercules, where you have, obviously, Hercules as the main character. This is clearly a bit of a spoof on the Greek myths and legends.
Just a little bit.
But you've got Megara, who is actually a fury, or it's the name of a fury in Greek myth and legend. And I really like her as a character. I mean, obviously you're not looking at any sort of accuracy with the film, but you've got her actually playing a betrayer. She's potentially playing one of the villains.
Yeah, well, I mean, she is a villain, actually, at the beginning. She's the temptress. She's there to cause trouble. And then kind of She turns against Hades, who's also excellent, by the way.
I love Hades.
Totally inaccurate, but excellent.
Yeah. It's just a really fun film, and you're right, she's very disillusioned. She's been in love before. She gave up her soul and ended up in Hades as a basically a prisoner, a slave, if you like. So she's really not, she's very cynical about the whole thing.
Yeah, and she's been very badly hurt. And I think her problem is that it's quite interesting because in some ways Hercules is the Disney princess.
Yes, that's the funny thing. He's the one who's there all sort of innocent and wide-eyed and kind and strong.
Yeah, and you know, she's there like at one point, and this is another example of her. She's quite a sexual being. She's aware of her own attractiveness and stuff like that. She's very flirty at one point because when she's been sent to find his weakness and stuff like that, and she thrusts her leg up toward him with her ankles and stuff like that. Weak ankles, and he sort of gulps and quietly, delicately puts her leg back where it belongs and stuff like that. And it's just like hands to himself. And she's just like, oh God, you're too perfect. This is a problem.
It's great. And I love the way that they've spun things there. And that's something Disney has continued to do quite well. And I think, obviously, it's Walt Disney's son sort of took over. So things became a lot less rigid. And it continues to go that way. So, yeah, she's a great character. After that, you have Mulan, who is my other favourite.
Oh, Mulan.
And I think it's because I, again, can really identify with being a bit of a tomboy, really not fitting in, not being able to portray what everyone else wants you to portray, but still really, really wanting to support, you know, your family, your friends. You want them to approve. You want to do things that they're going to like, but at the same time you cannot possibly fit the mold because you just don't.
Yeah, no, it's Mulan. I think I remember going to see Mulan in the cinema.
So did I. I was at university. I bet you weren't, were you?
No. I was a child.
How old were you?
Oh,
six,
God.
Seven.
Oh Christ, how old was I? I must have been,
it was 1998.
Yeah, 1998. I must have been about, probably 6 years old. I was 6 years old. I saw it in Holland. I remember seeing it in Holland, and I remember why I remember seeing it in Holland, because as we were going to the cinema, we spotted a couple of spotter beats.
Oh. Cool back.
So, anyway, I loved Mulan. Mulan was incredible. And again, this is the story of a woman who is absolutely trapped by people's expectations of her. And also her expectations of herself, because she wants to be this thing for her parents.
Yeah.
Not for her, but she wants to be it because she wants to be, you know, recognized by her parents. She wants to be helpful to her parents, and it's heartbreaking in some ways, because you see her really striving toward it, but it goes against everything that's natural to her. And I think one of my favorite bits, I'm who am I kidding, I love every single little bit of that movie, but one of my the bits I remember is that she's writing all these notes down on her arm, right?
Yes.
And then she, it's complex Chinese, and then she's just like, oh, it's time to go. And she attaches a stick with a bone to the dog and puts the feed on it and just sets him running off into the garden to feed the chickens, which I think was just ingenious. But it was just the moment where you have the father and he's praying to the ancestors. They're like, please, please help her. And the dog runs past. Just leaving feed everywhere, and the chickens just come and appear and they start pecking, and the father's face doesn't change. He just goes, please.
It's absolutely brilliant. And I mean, it's not like her parents are disappointed in her in a way. They know already that she's not like that. They can see that she's trying.
Yeah. And yeah, it's not that they're disappointed in her, or that they don't love her. They're just worried about her.
They're worried about her, and I think in some ways they don't really understand her because she's different.
Yeah.
And she probably doesn't really understand
her. I think her grandmother understands her.
Yeah, the grandmother's absolutely great. But I think the line that gets me is, how about a girl who's got a brain who always speaks her mind? And I'm like, oh God, that is so me. And it was so hard growing up in the 80s being like that.
Yeah.
You were not supposed to be that way.
No, and
You were not supposed to want to hang out with the boys and play football and then come home with two scuffed knees and covered in mud, you know?
no, indeed, you were not. And I Mulan was fantastic. It was a fantastic film. Not least because it's obviously based there's on truth. She was a real person in history. I didn't make that up, did I?
I thought it was a poem written in the Song Dynasty, which is sort of the 10th century. I think it may have been based on
On a myth of some description?
it was based on a myth, but the earliest written record is the 10th century, and it's a poem who I think was written by a female poetess.
There you go.
A female poetess. A
A
female
poet?
poet or a poetess. Oh dear. Yeah, anyway, because Mulan obviously means magnolia, so I
I
think
did
used a
not know
flowery
that.
name.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, she is a fantastic character. She's a really, really great character. And there's just so many golden bits in that movie.
And obviously you've got the young commander of the Emperor's armies, and he's quite well developed, and he just thinks this young soldier is weird, is really peculiar, but even he has to admit, you know what? That lad's got a really, good strategic mind on.
He has an entire gay crisis throughout that film, you know? That's
He
not
does.
lie.
Looking back at it now, it's kind of like, okay, I kind of really like this boy. Why do I
Boy.
like this boy? Oh, the boy's a girl. I'm now furious.
You made me question everything.
It's great. And I love the little tongue-in-cheek sort of, okay, well, to get into the palace, we'll disguise ourselves as concubines as well. I mean, that's Disney taking a lot of risks there.
Yeah, I mean they didn't call themselves concubines, but that's exactly what they were. But it was the other thing it was interesting, which was that we had a very positive villain in the end who didn't go, "Oh, woman," because he was a Hun, and during the era, Hun women actually held equal status to men.
And a lot of
So
them were very dangerous.
yeah, exactly. So it was when Mulan sort of goes, "Actually, that was me," and she pulls up her hair. Shan Yu, is that his name? Shan
Yeah.
Yu? Yeah, Shan Yu looks at her and doesn't go, "A woman." He just goes, "Oh, the soldier from the mountain." And I was just like, "Yay!
Yay.
Good feminist Shan Yu. I mean, you're trying to murder everyone, but you know, good for you." She's also the only Disney princess with a murder count, with a death count. Like she in the thousands.
Good point. But she did join the Chinese army, so.
Yeah, she literally destroyed the entire Hun army. She murdered everybody.
It's such a great film. It really is. It's funny, it's witty, and it's a really quite intelligent look at gender roles as well.
Yeah.
Which is, if you'd go back to, say, Snow White and Cinderella, it's not something you would have expected looking at those films.
No, absolutely not.
After Mulan, brief look at Tarzan. 1998, 1999, even.
Tarzan again has that fantastic line where Jane, having seen Tarzan for the first time, is then drawing him on the board, and she's there like, "And such eyes, such, you know," and she's describing, and her father just goes, "Would you like me to leave you in the blackboard alone for a little bit?" Or something along those lines, which is quite nice because he doesn't say it in a, "Oh, Jane, honestly, be sensible." He's just there like, "Oh dear. Well, I'll leave you alone for a bit."
And that is actually quite in keeping because I don't know if you've read, I mean, there's something like 20 odd Edgar Rice Burroughs novels about Tarzan, and some of them are good and some of them aren't quite so good. But Jane is actually a very non-conventional character for the time.
Yeah.
Again, technically she'd be a Victorian woman from America, but she is quite dynamic. She's really interested in the culture. She's not someone to sit and wait. She wants to get out there and do things.
Yeah.
And I
No,
think.
she was a nice character because she was also quite ladylike in many ways.
Yeah.
She was quite demure in many ways, but she wasn't a wimp, really.
No.
So I liked her. I liked
I
her.
did. After that, Atlantis. I can't remember the name of the princess.
Oh, cute. Oh gosh. What was she was fantastic as well.
She was great.
I'm gonna find it out. Hold on a second, because she was. I loved her. I
And
loved.
again, you've got kind of like a Hercules reprise there, where you've got the main character, Milo, actually being kind of the traditional Disney princess.
Yeah. Atlantis. Let's check this out. Oh, come on.
I think you're on
unfortunate
the
thing with writing Atlantis into Google is Atlantis is also, an entire thing. So
Yeah, and also there's Stargate Atlantis as well.
yeah, there's Stargate Atlantis, there's BBC Atlantis, which I miss. Keda.
Yeah.
That is it, Keda. That was a great film, actually.
Yeah,
I
it's good.
liked that a lot.
Again, really dynamic, very much knows her own mind. And I mean, isn't she supposed to be like over 100 years old? So
Yeah,
she.
she's that was another thing, which is the Milo or Milo, I guess he's called. I watched it in French the first time. So Milo going, oh hey, she says, I'm a hundred, a thousand years old or something like that, and he goes, oh hey, well, looking good, which I just thought was kind of really sweet.
He's a really nice character as well, and it's nice to see the development. I mean, we haven't mentioned it in some of the others, but it's nice to see the development of the male characters. They're not just this distant, stern, good-looking figure. They've got character and flaws, and
Yeah.
Milo's actually not very dynamic. He's a talented scientist and linguist,
Yeah.
but he's not really much of an adventurer.
No, and yeah, they meet all sorts of troubles, but and he's not great with people in some cases as well.
No, I love that.
And he's actually a really lovely character. I mean, moving away from the Disney princesses. As you say, the male characters are starting to develop now as well. And we're starting to see a lot more flavors of male characters, which is actually really rather nice.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, after this, not an animated one, but I thought it was worth mentioning. Because it's Disney taking the epic piss out of themselves, and the whole trope is Enchanted,
Enchanted.
which is an absolutely fantastic film. I defy anyone not to like that. Even if they don't like films where people suddenly burst into song, I defy them not to like that film.
It's just it's at one point where she gives like a wreath to a bunch of birds and tells them to go and deliver it to his girlfriend. He's they're like, they don't even know where she lives. I
It's like,
don't know
I
this song.
love it. And he's so cynical. Obviously, his wife had died, and he's been left with his daughter to raise. And he's stopped seeing the magic, the just
Yeah.
general everyday magic that exists in life, and become quite hard and cynical. He's stopped looking for, for what she would term true love.
Another reason I like that film is that at one point she calls to the animals of New York to help her with something, and she gets a ton of rats and cockroaches and stuff like that, and she doesn't freak out. She just goes, "Oh, okay,"
I
just
think there's
deals
even a
with
line
it.
in the song saying, "It doesn't matter that you're all vermin."
Yeah, which is actually quite nice because she's not the whole sort of, "No, I can only have cute animals." She's there like, "I'll take what I can get."
Though she's like overly innocent and a bit naive, and obviously is thrown into New York, which is like the worst place for that sort of person, she's quite resilient.
She is quite resilient. And the other thing is that her prince spends the entire time looking for her. And when they don't end up together, he's actually just still really happy because he's all about that happy ending. That's like they were never really in love with each other. They were in love with the idea of being in love with each other, if that
Yeah,
makes sense.
you never know. If it hadn't have all been stirred up by the stepmother, they might have ended up that way because they were both so optimistic and everything. But it's nice to see that fairy tale taken and put out of context like that.
Yeah. No, it was a
But,
lovely film that I succeeded because it basically didn't take itself too seriously.
yeah. And I still want to be in a park one day and for like everybody to erupt into song.
Fun fact, those were the people, those dancers were the dancers from Mary Poppins, the chimney dancers.
Cool.
Still got it at that age. It's great.
After that, we've mentioned The Princess and the Frog, and then there was Tangled
I liked Tangled.
in 2010. I liked that as well. You've got a bit of a rogue there as the prince character, if you
The
like.
interesting thing, his name was Eugene.
Was it? Do you know? I've only seen it once.
His name was Eugene in the end, as in Flynn Rider. That's a great name, you know. And then his name was actually Eugene. And at first, you're just like, oh, actually, I kind of just preferred him to be Flynn Rider, if that makes sense, because you're like, Flynn Rider, that's a fantastic name. And then at the end, she's calling him Eugene. And actually, that again was really, really nice. Because again, we have an example of a male character, and this is recognizing now, Disney recognizing now, it's not just women and young girls who are watching their princess films. It is young boys, it's just young people in general and old people, and everyone is watching their films.
Yeah.
So we have these developed male characters too, which is really nice. And Eugene is, you hear a story, he's an orphan and he hears about this character called Flynn Rider, and he wants to be Flynn Rider because Flynn Rider has everything in life. So he kind of steps away from his own sadness, his own sort of difficult existence, and takes on this mantle of being Flynn Rider, which I think is something that a lot of young people can associate with. The, oh God, my parents called me Eugene, that's terrible. And actually, it's not terrible. Eugene is actually quite a nice name. It feels a bit dated,
Yeah.
yes, but it's actually quite a nice name.
It's like you can make it mean whatever you want, really, by being who you
Exactly.
are, can't you?
Exactly.
And that's what Tangled's about. It's all about finding yourself. It's all about the search for personal identity and what you want out of life.
And it also looked at abusive households
Yes.
in a very clever way, actually. I quite liked it.
Perhaps there's less of a light shone on it now, but certainly there was a time when you would hear about children being kidnapped or going missing, and then they turn up sort of 10, 20 years later, having been raised by another family. But again, and it's looking at something like that, really, if you think about it. Because in the
Yes.
fairy tale, her father's forced to hand her over to the witch.
Whereas in this version, she does actually get to go home,
Yeah.
which is quite nice.
I think there's an interesting point there, which is the cutting of the hair actually in the fairy tale Rapunzel or Petronella, whichever
Yeah.
version you read. Usually, when you have a character with long hair like that in a fairy tale, if they have their hair cut and they're female, that usually means a loss of virtue.
Yeah.
And certainly in Rapunzel, the prince has been visiting her on the sly, and she gets pregnant.
In the original, it's that Mother Gothel realizes something when Rapunzel's clothes no longer fit her because she's pregnant.
But I like the way they did it in Tangled, because obviously they weren't going to include something like that. Because the cutting of the hair actually signals her becoming the person she wants to be.
Yeah, which is she stops being a possession.
Yeah, so that was nicely done. Brave, we've mentioned briefly. You've got a very typical tomboyish character there. But what I particularly like about Brave is they don't ever try to lead you into thinking this is a romance, because the three suitors are all equally unappealing and all equally uninterested in Merida.
Yeah, that was the interesting thing, was that it didn't show a bunch of suitors actually sort of being wildly in love with her. They were actually mostly just in competition with each other. It wasn't
Yeah.
anything to do with Merida.
And that's what you in that film's all about, you have a good relationship with your mother, but at the same time she wants something for you that isn't you. And neither of you can stop and listen long enough to really take in the other person's point of view. And maybe that's one that was more appreciated by adults, but I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought it was an incredible film. I mean, I cried like a baby, but then, that's to be expected. I was definitely sobbing. Plus, the music was great, so
Yeah.
that
There's
helped.
no real villain in that either.
No. Well, I mean, you've got Mordu,
Yeah, but not
the
really.
bear.
Yeah, the bear.
He's pretty scary.
It's very abstract, though, isn't it?
Yeah, because in the end, it turns out Mordu's actually kind of trapped.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to 2013 and Frozen.
Frozen. Well, again, we've mentioned this one a little bit. Sisterly love. Now looking at the you can't just fall in love with the first person you meet kind of thing.
Yeah.
Taking the mick out of itself a little bit.
And I like the fact that you've got two sisters there who are very different in temperament, and obviously their experience of their own childhood is very different.
Yeah.
Because you've got the elder sister who's had to be very, very responsible, and unfortunately they've gone about it the wrong way in dealing with teaching her to use her power, or rather repress it. And you've got Anna who's a lot more gregarious and actually, wants to be sociable with people. You can tell these two sisters love each other,
Yeah.
but Elsa's always had to push her away, or has felt she's had to. And it's that's really, really sad. And perhaps that's something that particularly resonates for me, having
Because
sisters and having
you've
been
got
the elder
sisters.
sister who had to be really responsible.
See, I'm the younger sister, so
I've never
I'm
been able
Anna,
to
I
free
guess.
I've never been able to freeze anything or create snowmen or anything like
Sure, you haven't.
that, so
That's just what someone who was able to do that would say.
But you kind of love both of those characters. And if you think about that compared to the source material of the Snow Queen, because you've got Anna kind of playing the I mean, Elsa, if you like, is kind of the Snow Queen. The Snow Queen kidnaps young boys to try and build the mirror for her, the mirror that has, that was built in hell, that was supposed to reflect God, but defense subtly, this is Hans Christian Andersen again, but subtly distorted to himself. And it's Kai, the boy who goes missing in the Snow Queen, because the Snow Queen again kidnaps young boys. She almost can't help herself. She's the personification of winter and this sort of very frozen type of love.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different story, and yet somehow they've managed to keep elements of it there.
No, they I think they've definitely changed it. And this is another thing we're seeing in a lot of the sort of the Disney stuff now, is that they're moving further and further away from the source materials. It's becoming a lot more adaptions, loose adaptions rather than strict adaptions, which I don't actually have a problem with, because actually it's recognizing that times have changed,
Yeah.
and the audiences have changed, which is nice. But I still feel that they managed to capture the essence of a lot of these stories, which is nice.
Yeah, definitely. There'd have to be something wrong if you didn't sort of really appreciate the way Frozen did it, I think. I think a lot of people got fed up with Frozen because it was such a big hit, it got overplayed almost. I mean, I
Yeah.
still think it's great, but
No, I think that fathers and mothers everywhere just couldn't bear to listen to Let It Go anymore.
I like it because it's again you it's a film about growing up ultimately,
Yeah.
and who do you want to be? So Anna gets a little bit wiser, and Elsa manages to let down her guard a bit, which is a gross oversimplification really, but I do like the way they did that.
Yeah. And I think ultimately the whole thing movie was about communication.
Yeah, and last of all, we have Moana, which I haven't seen, and I've actually written 1216, and obviously it wasn't re released in 1216. It was released last year in 2016.
Oh, 1216.
I don't think they had the animated feature film back then.
Oh, you don't think so?
I mean, I could be wrong,
You
but
could be wrong.
so I have to admit, and I've tried not to really spoilify myself too much about it, so I don't really know a lot about it.
No, neither do I. I was going to go and see it, but as I've stated in previous podcast, injury has prevented me from doing so. I'm pretty much stuck in the house at the moment, so I haven't been able to go and see it. And I'm hoping it's still on in the cinema by the time I can limp out.
But that might be one we can revisit in a future podcast. The only thing to say is, again, I think the entire cast is Hawaiian, is that right?
Actually, this is a good point. You brought it up. We were corrected recently. We said it was Hawaiian. It's actually Polynesian.
Polynesian, okay.
Yeah, so
Then.
apologies for that mistake in previous podcast. Moana is Polynesian, not Hawaiian, I believe.
And beg your pardon, part of the reason that I don't know that is the fact I've been really trying not to spoilify myself.
And that's it. I think we've reached the end.
We have. And again, we've really only sort of skipped over them, but it's a really interesting look at from Snow White to Moana.
And how it's changed, and not just the princesses, but the princes. So there we go. Disney, keep doing what you're doing, and we hope to see even more, see where it goes as you adapt to your audience and you adapt to the modern viewers. Why are you laughing?
I was laughing because I was just thinking weirdly that it's our anniversary episode next week.
It is our anniversary episode next week. We've been so happy together.
Our 1 year anniversary. It's two dragons.
In which case, we're going to have a celebratory episode. So, actually, this is the point. This is where we open it up to our listeners. Please give us some suggestions for next week's episode. What would you like our episode to be on for our anniversary? Comment on Facebook or send us a message, and yeah, we'll see what we can do. And on that note, I think we've reached the end.
We have.
Back to editing, and yeah, we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders, or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note that no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.